If you were stranded on a desert island, which mood stabilizers would you want on the formulary?
Welcome to the Psychiatric Times podcast. I'm Chris Aiken, the mood disorders section editor for Psychiatric Times. And with me today is Kelly Newsom, a psychiatric NP who co-hosts another podcast with me, the Carlatt Psychiatry podcast. I've been poring over textbooks and treatment guidelines, and there are four mood stabilizers that keep rising to the top. None of them are perfect, but each has a unique role in bipolar disorder that would make me want to take them with me if I was on a desert island. Lithium, quetiapine, Seroquel, lurasidone, Latuda, and lamotrigine, Lamictal.
What makes them special?
Lithium and quetiapine top the lists for all three phases of the illness: mania, depression, and the maintenance phase. They have some of the best number needed to treat for each of those phases. Lurasidone and lamotrigine have unique benefits in bipolar depression, although they don't work in the case of lamotrigine or have never been tested in the case of lurasidone in bipolar mania. That's still an important quality because people with bipolar disorder spend five times as much of their life in depression as they do in mania and hypomania.
Lithium has fallen out of use in the last 30 years. Why do we still use it in bipolar disorder?
Some people call lithium the gold standard in bipolar disorder, and the reason is probably that it has some of the best maintenance effects. For example, in long-term studies, it's beaten Depakote in terms of psychiatric outcomes. But it's when we look beyond those traditional psychiatric outcomes, the ones we measure in rating scales, that lithium really shines. I believe we need to think beyond the symptom list of mania and depression when we're treating bipolar for the long haul, because this is an illness that takes 10 years off of people's lives, and it's not because of those symptoms that they're dying. It's from things like heart disease, suicide, cancer, stroke, and lung disease. And lithium reduces a lot of those risks. It's the only mood stabilizer that reduces the risk of suicide. And although people often avoid lithium out of a fear that it's medically toxic, it actually lowers the risk of cancer, heart disease, stroke, as well as viral illnesses. All of those illnesses occur at higher frequencies in people with bipolar disorders. For example, vascular disease is the leading cause of death in people with bipolar. They tend to come down with vascular disease in their early 40s instead of age 60, which is typical for most people. So there's something about bipolar disorder that's affecting the blood vessels and causing heart attack and stroke. Lithium is involved in cardiac remodeling. So even though arrhythmias can be a rare side effect of lithium, it also has some cardiac benefits. And viral illnesses. That may not come to the top of your mind for reasons to use lithium, but certain viral illnesses like herpes are not only more common in bipolar disorder because of the impulsive behaviors that the disorder brings, but they actually worsen the outcomes. They cause more cognitive problems in people with bipolar, and there's some evidence that using lithium reduces the viral effects and improves the cognition in these patients.
Who responds best to lithium?
It's the textbook cases, the classic bipolar that you read about in school, the ones with euphoric manias, and the ones who have a clear separation of their mania and depression and return to normal functioning when they're not in those mood episodes. So they lack a lot of mixed states, rapid cycling, and major psychiatric comorbidities. Although there is one that a recent study found, panic disorder actually predicts a good response to lithium.
Quetiapine, that's one that I tend to avoid. It has so many side effects, like why would you use it?
In choosing quetiapine, I'm somewhat going by the numbers. When Terence Ketter analyzed the number needed to treat for all the mood stabilizers available a couple years ago, this did not include lurasidone, quetiapine stood out for the best numbers needed to treat in all three categories. That's mania, depression, and long-term maintenance. So this is a medication that covers a lot of ground, and it covers a lot of ground that lithium doesn't. Unlike lithium, quetiapine is going to work better for people with bipolar disorder who have mixed states, rapid cycling, and a lot of comorbid anxiety. And you're right that the side effects of quetiapine, mainly sedation, orthostasis, and weight gain and metabolic problems, are big reasons to stay away from it and common reasons that patients stop it. On the other hand, quetiapine has two qualities that patients tend to like. It's the only mood stabilizer with good evidence in anxiety disorders, and it improves sleep. Not just sedation, but it improves sleep quality as well.
Fluoxetine and lamotrigine, I can see why they are the top two choices for bipolar depression, but how do you choose between them?
I asked the patient if they'd rather take something that's going to work fast or something that has very few side effects over the long term. So, simply put, lurisidone is your quick fix, while lamotrigine is something that's easy to stick with long term. Lamotrigine has few of the adverse effects that matter most to patients, like weight gain, fatigue, sexual dysfunction, and long-term medical risks. There's even a controlled trial of lamotrigine in weight loss clinics, where it helped a little bit. But lamotrigine is not a very fast actor. In the short-term studies, it has a number needed to treat of 12, compared to 5 for lurisidone. But those numbers needed to treat shouldn't dissuade you away from lamotrigine, because what it's really good at is preventing future episodes of bipolar depression, and that's what most patients need over the long term. They're generally going to have to stick with one of these medications, possibly for life, and they're going to want something that's tolerable.
Are there certain types of bipolar disorder that lamotrigine works better for?
One study found that it worked better for bipolar 2 than bipolar 1, which makes sense because depressions are a lot more common in bipolar 2. And this one's more of an unproven tip, but some experts, including myself, find that it works really well for cyclothymic disorder, for those patients who have rapid mood swings that go up and down every couple days. Joe Goldberg, for example, found that one of lamotrigine's main benefits was that patients had more days well in a given week over the long term. And a few people have written about its use in cyclothymic disorder. I found it very useful there as well.
You said it's well tolerated, but what about the rash?
The dreaded rash, Stevens-Johnson syndrome. That nearly took lamotrigine off the market after its release in the early 90s. Well, back then, lamotrigine was dosed at the full dose right away. But they found that if you dose it according to the new guidelines, where it generally start with 25 milligrams a day for 2 weeks, and that has to be adjusted for drug interactions, the rate of serious rash goes down from 1 in 100 to 1 in 3,000. Interestingly, though, the rate of benign rashes stays about the same with both the old and the new titration schedules. So one thing you're going to run into when you use lamotrigine is a lot of benign rashes, false alarms. About 10% of patients have them. So what do? You got to stop lamotrigine. But if you can just get through that period, the first 2 months, without a rash, this is a medication that's not going to have any long-term medical risks like tardive dyskinesia or metabolic problems.
There are a lot of other atypicals that treat bipolar depression, such as cariprazine, Vraylar, lurasidone, Latuda, olanzapine, fluoxetine combo, Symbiax, and quetiapine, Seroquel. So why did you choose lurasidone?
Well, I already have quetiapine on the desert island, so all that's left is cariprazine, Vraylar, and olanzapine, fluoxetine combo. Both of those are great medications, and they're going to help a lot of people. Right now, cariprazine doesn't have the greatest number needed to treat. It clocks in at around 11 for that. But cariprazine did shine in a recent meta-analysis where it was found to be one of the most tolerable of the mood stabilizers overall. And I find that to be true as well. If you stick to the dose for depression, which is 1.5 milligrams a day, cariprazine is one that a lot of patients can tolerate. Olanzapine-fluoxetine combo, on the other hand, is one of the least tolerable, although at least it has, to its credit, a strong amount of efficacy. So, lurasidone is a nice one that meets in the middle with relatively good tolerability and relatively decent efficacy in bipolar depression. But remember, I've got quetiapine in my back pocket, and the two have pretty opposite side effects. Where lurasidone's main problem is nausea and akathisia, you're not going to see that with quetiapine. It's going to be more problems of hypotension, dizziness, and sedation. So, bottom line, patients who can't tolerate one will often tolerate the other, and both have a pretty good effect size in bipolar depression. There's really no such thing as the best mood stabilizer, and perhaps this whole podcast was just an exercise in playing with the idea of four that you really need. But that's more how it works in bipolar disorder. We don't have perfection, but what we do need is to know how to use the tools we have at our disposal and work with patients to find the medication that's the best fit for their needs, whether that be depression, mania, long-term maintenance, or just tolerability. Thank you for joining us. I hope you found these podcasts free of bias. I have no conflicts of interest to declare and have never received funding from the pharmaceutical industry.